Desi, noun, a person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here. What's up, everybody? Welcome to American Desis. I'm Akash.
I'm Arjun.
And today we have with us probably one of my best friends in the stand-up world. His name is Prashant Venkatramanajam. I can spell that shit because we're homies. And I don't want to talk to him about stand-up. Here's the thing. Prashant is one of the people that just we talk, and it's just always a good conversation. So I just brought him on this podcast. It's probably not going to be a very formal interview. I just kind of want this to be a conversation. I always find what he has to say interesting. And let's just jump into it. We good?
Well, yeah, we started what we started right before we were saying that I was like, man, let's just press record was how we all first met each other, specifically how we all met Akash and how we felt.
Prashant's story is hysterical.
Yeah, Prashant, start us off with that. Then I'm
so
gonna take over.
I've
never heard your side of this.
I was doing a set at the Belly Room in the Comedy Store, and it was a booked show, and you were just there already for some reason. And
out.
If you haven't been to the Belly Room, it's this really weird dungeon-esque room.
Yeah,
it's a store. And
it's got
mirrors in it, like a sex dungeon. It's just weird.
Yeah.
And you were sitting there, and I was doing a set, and I was doing some really heady material, and I could see you responding to it, because anytime an Indian comic sees another Indian comic, you kind of just put an eye on them,
right,
just to see how they're responding to your
right.
stuff. And you were just giving me one of those, like, huh, like those kind of laughs,
right.
Like good points, but I'm not going to give it up yet because I don't know if I like this guy.
Yeah. No, I think I immediately liked you, and I remember commenting on this. You went up as Prashant Venkatramanajam. There was no which is a super hard last name for white people to say, and it'd be very easy to be like, oh, I'm just a Prashant V or whatever. And you said
sure.
the whole name. And
yeah.
I remember telling you, good for you, because I thought you were much newer in the game than you were. I was like, good
yeah.
for you, man. Don't change that.
So we basically just went out to get food afterwards, and you were just saying typical Akashisms, just ridiculous. I think at one point he was like, fuck books.
Books ain't shit.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Like, I didn't. But the thing is, it's all an act. If you guys haven't figured this out yet, he doesn't believe anything he says. He reads way more than you think he reads. And he just tries to get a rise.
Nonfiction too.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Always like his current book is For the People, Negotiating. Right? Are
Negotiation
you still...
Genius.
Yeah, yeah. So it's basically to get a rise out of you, and you were just such a caricature that it wasn't clear at that moment that you're just doing this to act out. But I think over time, as we started talking more casually, you would drop these little jewels that it was very clear there was a lot more going on. So I feel like we became friends because for me, I was just like, why is he like this? What is the point? Like, it's like the Joker. You're like, to what end?
Yeah, I remember being very on when I met you. Like, I was really hamming it up because Prashant is a guy who will use SAT words for no reason. And I'm just like it was just funny for me to, especially then, to foil that.
Sure.
With, like, uber ignorance.
Sure.
Like, I'm going to just turn it up. I remember making fun of you for using big words. And
yeah.
like, man, I don't want to hear that dumb shit.
Yeah.
I mean, talk
yeah.
like a human. And then that was just, I was really hamming it up. And you said, why? Because I read. And then I go, man, books ain't shit.
Yeah.
And it was just like a lot of, it was a really crazy way to meet.
I think I was fortunate because I met him the first 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. I met him, he was doing a set. And I, you know, I'm not a comic at all. But I was sitting down there with a comic. And I turned to him, this guy that I knew, a mutual friend of ours. And I was like, oh, weird. I mean, is this dude gay? I was straight up just watching. I was like, oh. And then, like, literally a minute and a half later, I was like, oh, no, he's not. But then my mutual friend, who doesn't always have the best social cues, when we were hanging out later, I had already come to the conclusion he wasn't. And even if he did, I wouldn't have cared. But I, like, can come to the...
Yeah, but organic. He wasn't.
And then he came out, our mutual friend, he was just like, oh, by the way, Akash, man, Arjun thought you were gay. And I was like, how do I meet this dude now? But then the next time I met you, we went out for food, right? It was the next time.
We met up at like a bar through the same mutual friend.
And then, but it was, you very quickly didn't have your character
right.
as a part. Because we were talking, for us, it actually got deep real quick.
Yeah.
And then I only started to learn about the caricature later, and then I was just like, wait,
why do you
think
that
happening?
Was?
I think, honestly, because we started talking about this stuff. We started talking about, like, I tend to, there's a joke, in the theater company, they've been making fun of me the last couple of weeks for this a lot. They realize, they're like, Harsh, man, you can't do small talk. Immediately, like, within 2 seconds of a conversation, I was talking with them yesterday. I was like, oh, wait, so you do you think your, like, relationships are futile between people if the distance is involved? Yeah. Like, it's just, like, literally within a couple minutes.
And they're like good morning.
Good morning. Like, what's going on? So I don't know if that was just, like, I don't know. What do you think? Why do you think
I also like to call people out on what I think is, a hypocrisy or whatever the word is. But I remember you were talking about, like, love and relationships, and I don't remember what it was. Honestly, I don't. But I remember being like, nah, that's not true. And I started trying to call you out on stuff. And then that just, you would defend yourself in, like, a philosophical position or whatever. And then I would come back at you with a philosophical position. And then it just went from there. And it was,
but
like 3 hours of that.
You weren't on. You weren't, like, hamming it up. Why weren't that, you know what I mean? Was there something about that?
A lot of it also depends on how tired he is.
Yeah, and just sometimes I feel like, and sometimes I don't, I think. You know what I mean? With Prashant, and it was just a funny foil to me. This is a fucked up way that I interact, I guess. But, like, this dude who's so, like, comes across kind of in his own, not head, but, like, kind of in a shell, quieter guy, intellectual guy, comes across, uses the big words, is very cerebral material. And I was just like, the funny foil here is for me to really turn up. There's another comedian who hates me to this day, Raj Desai, because he's such a, like, quiet guy. You know Raj.
Yeah.
Kind of very, again, also cerebral dude. And I was just like, yo, Raj, what'd you think about ratchet pussy? Can you say no to it? Because I can't. And it was just, he didn't get the joke, but to me, it was the funniest thing. I don't really care what your perception of me is, especially initially. It's like, whatever, I don't know this guy. He's not a friend. Who cares? I'm going to do what's funny for me in this moment and what's fun for me. What's fun for me with you, Arjun, was talking about relationships and heady stuff. When this is just a guy who comes across as someone who just, we're not necessarily going to have a philosophical debate, but he reads a lot and whatever. The fun thing is for me to just be an ignoramus.
Is that your test of finding out how tolerant they are?
I don't think so. I mean, it's probably a defense mechanism. I hate people getting to know me. I'm a very private dude.
Hmm.
Shockingly so.
Yeah, vulnerability is, I mean, it's something we talk about a lot, but it's a difficult. I mean, do you find vulnerability to be difficult?
Not really. It depends on certain subjects, because I think, and this kind of gets back to that question I asked right before you hit record, was vulnerability. Almost every problem I have in my life almost always leads to, if I had only been vulnerable sooner.
Same here.
So
sooner,
because any problem I generally have, it's because I'm not wanting to say the thing I should be saying.
You couldn't be true to who you were.
Yeah.
In that moment.
And so it almost is like, what is the point? Like, why am I wasting this energy? It doesn't make any sense, because ultimately I'm leading towards a path of telling this person or confronting myself with a truth I didn't want to hear or I didn't want to tell them, and it almost always smooths out the problem.
Let me ask you a question. In those scenarios, so in a scenario where you wish you had told the, you know, you wish you had been vulnerable / told the truth earlier, were you aware earlier of that truth, or were you only through the, because sometimes you're not aware of the truth and going through that then allows you to
see. Okay, I have a sneaking suspicion that everybody, a lot of the times, they know what they should do, but they rationalize in circles in a way to avoid doing it.
I don't know, because then that would seem to cut at the idea of self-awareness.
And maybe I'm biased in that, because I do consider myself a pretty self-aware person. I think that's born out of comics being self-conscious, because you don't want to be the one person in the room that isn't in on the joke or isn't in on what's happening in the room.
But isn't self-conscious and self-aware? I want to draw a distinction between those two terms. Or do you not see
self-conscious? Self-conscious sounds like an insecure thing. Self-aware.
Yeah, I think there's shame associated with self-consciousness.
Yeah,
I think self-awareness plus shame is self-conscious.
Let me say this to you, what you were saying earlier, though. I think when we're doing something we know we shouldn't be doing, then we will rationalize in circles until there's a way to justify it.
Right.
But I don't think we actively avoid the thing we should be doing because we rationalize.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
If that makes sense.
I mean, yeah, that might be just my own experience. But a lot of times when I really think about, I have this issue, this is the right path I should be taking, but I'm not going to go down that right now.
That definitely happens, I think. But
yeah.
I don't think that's the norm.
But the reason that I asked my question about, you know, did you know it earlier? Because right before, you had also talked about your phone. And you had talked about, like, this way that our phone has influenced our lives. And one thing that I feel about with technology, it has hindered our ability to get to know ourselves. Because any time that we have spent, I mean, listen, the truth is we don't even go to the bathroom without our phone anymore. We can't go to the bath. We spend very little time without something external stimulating us. And because of that, I find that we spend precious little time with ourselves. Now, if we are going to gain what I call self-awareness, we need to, you know, have to, you know, actually spend time with that self. So I didn't know if, you know,
totally
that related that, to what you were talking
I mean,
about.
I think that idea, a lot of people are writing about it currently because everybody is feeling this anxiety the second you don't have your phone. And on top of that, the whole dating culture, Tinder, Match, this instant hookup culture and this lack of intimacy. I mean, people are talking about that nonstop for our generation. And I think it is really true. And it, I don't know, I think it just has a lot to do with silence in all aspects. I don't think people are good with silence either in their own minds and or in conversation. It's just one of those things where, you know, when you look at your phone, you get like a dopamine rush depending on what you're looking at. And I think like it is becoming like addictive in that sense. So for your ability, there's like almost a withdrawal period that, you know, no,
this is scientific. It is addictive.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And I've known people that are deleting their Facebook just because they want to stop that constant, that thought process.
But what I'm saying is back in like the 1600s, you may still have been uncomfortable with silence because maybe that's a human condition, but you had to get comfortable with it because it was you. That was your experience. When the sun goes down and there's no fucking light, what else are you going to do? When you're sure. fucking hoeing the field with just you and your hoe.
Yeah.
And I mean that in like the farming
like
instrument.
Now that's real intimacy. That's why they had it. They knew what was up.
Farming instruments, yeah. You know. Standpoint, like you have to get comfortable with that. So I wonder if that you know, back in history, if there was more self-awareness. I mean, this is not something we can.
I don't know. It's there's a trade-off, right? Because that what comes with our phones is more access to way more information, way sooner on a constant rate.
Is that
right?
Good? Is that good?
No, I mean, I think this gets back to that thing, efficiency versus effectiveness. You're saying yes, we're getting efficient. Information way more efficiently, but our brains don't have the ability to parse and use it effectively.
True.
Because you can't evaluate all the scenarios properly to make a good decision just based on information. The brain isn't built to do that. That's why people always say like the best decisions always come from your gut. Because eventually you just have to stop processing and go with what you know in that moment. More information is not going to help you make a better decision.
Right.
It's just not. And
sometimes
I think
it paralyzes you.
It, totally. Choice paralysis. That happens right. all the time. And it that's why people, I love Chipotle. Because you can't fuck up your order generally. Like you can't order one item and then be like, oh shit, I should have gotten the pulled pork. Like there's six things and it's just easy to pick and you walk out having a great meal versus you go to like Witch or like a place that has like 15,000 different combinations and you just like can't help but figure like wonder what, well, this shit sandwich or shit. I mean, that's exactly what's happening with partners. Right? The options.
You mean relationships?
Relationships. So like the options that are out there. I mean, Aziz talks about this in a new book. Like, we are a culture of maximizers. We are always looking for the best, whether or not we're entitled to it or not. But that always limits the ability to get super, super close with one person and just take that leap and hoping that they will be fulfilling.
Isn't that John Nash? Isn't that his whole theory? I got this from, I'm not even going to lie, from A Beautiful Mind, but here he's like, five guys are going to go after the most beautiful girl. No one's going to get that beautiful girl. Then the second tier women are going to be feel insulted. So you're going to end up with nobody. So just go for the one just slightly.
I thought that was different. I thought that was the way to make the one woman jealous because you're the one guy who doesn't. Maybe I'm mixing up them.
I don't know. I don't remember.
I might be mixing up A Beautiful Mind and How to Be a Player.
This is Guy Code meets Russell Crowe right now.
But you were saying, though, the maximizers and that going for the is stopping us from being super close to one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at some point, right, like our parents, they all got arranged marriage. They were just, you know, that if they stayed together with no information for that long, like, it's like the 80-20 rule, right? Like you have 20% of the effort gets you 80% of the way there, or, you know, and then you're spending that rest of the effort.
I don't know about the 80-20 rule. Tell me about that.
it's just, again, this is like a...
It's a Gladwell thing, right?
It's just like a principle. I don't even know what it is. It's just basically like to be effective in your life, a lot of times people, you know, to get like if you're trying to build an app or build a company, you expend all this energy. But to be really effective, you will get most of your gains in the first 20% of your efforts. That's where all this build, and then you spend a lot more energy basically getting that last 20%. You know what I mean? It's the difference between getting a B minus and an A plus. You know how much extra work you have to do to get the A plus because everybody is like right there. Right.
So is the point of that we...
Once you get a task, be okay with a lack of perfection. Don't make the perfect the enemy of the good.
That goes so against our culture.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's a principle that's lost constantly. I mean,
don't apply that culture at all for partners. For partners, it is take what you can get. Don't waste your time trying to find the perfect partner. This
that's
is the
true,
one.
Actually. That's interesting. I remember my cousin, you know, he was dating a white girl out here because he was here for college from India. He's an Indian from India. And they had to, and then he went back home and he had to end the relationship. His family was like, no, you need to marry someone. You need to be somewhere back home. And I remember he was telling me that his nanny told him, listen, if she answers 35 of the 50 criteria that you're looking for, snap her up.
Yeah. Totally.
If you're getting 30, because no one's going to get 50 out of 50. So it's interesting. That's an interesting, but I never really thought about that. We are such a perfection, especially the Desi American community, because our parents that came over here was part of the brain drain, part of like a professional, like a lot of it that was...
All the perfection is geared toward achievement that you can quantify.
Mm-hmm.
You can't quantify how good a marriage is. You know what I mean?
I mean, she tried. She said 35 of 50 criteria. She quantified that.
Sure, but that's not like, do you have a healthy marriage? Here's 10 questions. You know what I mean? It's, do you have a healthy marriage? Are y'all still together? Yeah, sure. What else do you need?
But we know that arranged marriages arranged marriages aren't some harbinger of success. I mean, they're not, they haven't been in our experience.
But that's not the point. My point is just that that's funny because that's the one place where we don't care about perfection.
No, I know, but I was going back to what he was saying.
Well,
about
that's the thing. The only criteria
like,
for a marriage success is binary, right? Like, are you together? Are you not together? Outwardly,
that's
the only
success.
No, I know. I'm saying, but outwardly, that's the only thing you can see from a couple, right? You can't, unless you're really, really close friends with them and you're getting all the information, you're never going to know how bad it is. Yeah.
Right. I don't know what you're trying to say then, because I'm just saying that unless you're trying to say, because your point from what I understood was you look at what people have done with arranged marriages without too many choices,
mm-hmm.
right? That they literally had without too much information specifically.
Right.
And they've stayed together. But I'm saying, I'm trying to poke at that to say, well, have those always been really, is that
totally?
Really
I think we're speaking to the same point.
Okay,
I agree with that completely. Like, you don't know if that marriage is good. They're probably together because, I mean, a lot of Indian women from that era just weren't given the leeway to even think about leaving their husband. Like,
right.
It didn't even cross their mind,
right.
right? So you have no idea, like, what that marriage was like. But getting back to the original point is, like, the thing I've been struggling with the most lately is we're all at this age where, like, whether or not you're in entertainment, it's just your career and your personal life are, like, it's like two trains coming head-to-head. Like, there's this pressure that's pursuing a personal life to a healthy degree, but also being able to achieve the things you want to. And that's where time is becoming so critical. Like who you choose to spend your time with, what you choose to spend your time prioritizing.
Right.
And that's
How
where
old
like
are you?
28.
Right.
And so I know people over 30 are fucking shaking their heads right now while they're listening to this because they just think that
Akash,
sounds dumb.
Are you
as
shaking
shit.
Your head?
But you know, when there's a 30-year-old billionaire out there in the world, it sucks because you're constantly comparing. Like,
only
okay,
if
like,
you're quantifying that as like only if we're using that as the barometer for happiness.
Of course, but I think that's like implicit. Like people just do that without even thinking because it's the easiest thing to point to. You know what I mean?
Sure, but what we do without thinking is, I don't know. I guess I'm saying that's just something we need to stop paying attention to our first impulses, mentally, physically.
I also get age. Like, Prashanth and I talked about this yesterday. It's, if you're a 32-year-old woman, you have a clock. Guys don't have that problem as much.
Yeah.
But you have a clock. We are aging better than we ever did, but we can't act like aging doesn't exist. If I'm 40 and I have my first kid, when the kid is 13 playing me in basketball, I'm 53.
Yeah.
I might herniate a disc just stretching. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there is, I know what you mean. Ideally, yeah, you don't think about this stuff. But until we have a founding youth, you got to think about this stuff.
Yeah. I think, like, for me, when it comes to time, I've been really listening to a lot of podcasts and reading a lot more books about just...
Especially the American Daisy podcast.
Just about living with more... That. Yeah.
He was like, I'm just going to blow by that because, nope.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you guys. Well, I'm not even going to lie at this point.
But yes, you've been listening to a lot of other
just trying
podcasts.
To figure out, I don't know when this became really important to me, but like ritual in my lifestyle and trying to get something down that is effective, whether it be working out or meditation or even thinking about all the things I should be thinking about. It's almost like this sounds weird, but do you guys listen to the Tim Ferriss podcast?
No.
You guys know this? Okay, he's basically like an entrepreneur, and he just interviews people about their lifestyles and how they choose to live and how they make business decisions and all these things. And you just get a really clear sense of how analytical people can be with their time or their spouse or different aspects of their life. And it's just interesting to hear their little alchemy for success. Because it helps you inform, like, what are my priorities? What are the things I want to maximize for? And what are the steps I can take to make that a reality, you know?
Do you see yourself as an entrepreneur or do you see yourself as an artist?
That's such a good question.
This is actually a fucking great question for him in particular.
I struggle with that all the time because I think in so many respects nowadays, being a good artist is being a good entrepreneur.
I don't agree.
Okay, why?
Why don't I agree?
Yeah.
I don't
What about the principles of being an entrepreneur conflict with being an artist?
I think that the principle of being an entrepreneur is building wealth.
I don't agree with that as a starting point.
Okay.
I think the principal tenet of being an entrepreneur is building value.
Oh, interesting.
I don't think a lot of the people that are truly great entrepreneurs, money is important, but it factors in because that is a metric. That's the only powerful metric we have for value because it can be exchanged for a ton of different things. But just in terms of value, I think that's how much you've affected and impacted people's lives for the better. I think really good entrepreneurs...
So is Zuckerberg an entrepreneur?
Yeah.
What value? See, now, because that's where it gets, for me, like, it gets...
It is murky, but he can say, I brought millions of people together, billions of people together. I've made the world
so much
smaller.
He's had impact.
Yeah.
But when you're talking, I guess value feels like there's a connotation, maybe, and that's my own interpretation. I might be projecting upon it, but value has a connotation of
like a
positive.
Moral imperative.
But yeah, I guess so. I guess I have to honor that. Yeah, I guess there is a thing to that. I guess my thing, why I feel like artists have to involve entrepreneurial aspects because they need an audience. But
gotcha.
I think this, but an artist, like the actual artist, like the cultivation of art, has nothing to do with efficiency, effectiveness. It doesn't have to do with, like, the actual formation of the art is often runs counter to the principles of building business. So maybe
I'm
getting.
So I would agree with that. I think the paths to achieving both of those things are very different skill sets, but I think the ultimate thing, like the guiding intention, isn't that different if it's coming from the right place. Because there is an artistry to really good entrepreneurship. It takes...
No, there's artistry to everything. I mean, if we're just going to place artistry, but that's not what we're talking about.
We're talking about art.
I'm going to be honest, I think this debate can just be a lot of semantics. The reason I thought it was a good question for Prashant is, and this is a tie-in to the podcast, is you want to start a production company.
Right? Yes.
For whom? For us, correct? Not me.
Akash Singh.
For South Asians.
Yeah, right. I think one of the things that Okay, so real talk, let me rewind a little bit and explain why this is a little bit about my history. So my I grew up with a dad who was an entrepreneur, and he was a serial businessman, and he struggled a lot in trying to get his business off the ground. As such, when he wanted me to kind of take over things for him, I was really against it. I had such a negative view of people in business and business culture. It was just felt like profits, and it always felt like profits at the expense of human life. And they'll always be willing to fuck their customers out of things. And as I've gotten older and I've gotten to know entrepreneurs who really care about their craft and what they do, I've started to shift away from that. Now, one of the things I realized early on, and we've talked about this a lot, Akash, is as an Indian American, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, Arjun, is the way people become stars in the current system is if you're in entertainment, you have to not just have one hit. I mean, the reason Brad Pitt is who he is because he had a breakout role, but there were other roles that let him fill that same leading man position over and over and over again. So there's brand recognition. There's like constantly staying in people's faces as that image. When you're a brown or Asian actor or even Hispanic, but it's changing a little bit, you can get that one hit. But to find another role that's going to be the next great thing you're going to do is hard to come across because people aren't just writing roles like that for you.
Right, but actually, the reason that I don't think it's happened yet for us is because I don't think we've had that leading man yet, truthfully. I think that Cal Penn headlined a movie. He was probably the first South Asian man that headlined a movie.
Yeah.
And then he had the namesake, but let's just be very crass about it. He's too goofy looking to be the leading man.
Well, I think the thing is even more than that is they didn't sexualize him. You don't have to be good looking necessarily. There's tons of not great looking guys that are sexualized that girls go, I want to fuck that guy. And I want to, like, they see him as the guy that is going to win and get the girl and beat the bad guy.
Here's what I think. I think that Utkarsh has broken out, and looking at his career track, he is getting placed in a lot of similar roles after Pitch Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of roles for the like urban, cool, hip hop, rapping,
sure,
kind of clowny brown dude.
Right.
Cal Penn has gotten his series of that are quite similar. I actually think that as soon as we have someone who's given the true opportunity to be leading man, I don't think it would be that difficult for them to sustain it. Because
is that they haven't had the true opportunity.
Yet. But I don't think that, I mean, I just think that, look at the people that, I think that it's coming. I really do. I think that the way that
100%. I think it is happening.
I mean, I think the way that we are starting to allow for the sexualization of the South Asian man to be, like, present on screen.
I mean, that is the craziest dichotomy I've ever seen, is that half a world away, you couldn't get Indian dudes that are more alpha. Like, they are insane. They are, like, roided up wrestlers. And they have women fawning over them, and they have hero shots, and they have
all... You're talking about Bollywood.
Yeah, Bollywood. That's what I'm talking about, yeah. And they are...
Not just walking down the streets of Mumbai.
Yeah. Right. They are demigods, basically, right? And then here, it's like you couldn't find a role that's more dickless and loserish for an Indian guy. Like, they are... Like, all the roles, they're so castrated, and you're always the dude that can never get the girl. And it's weird, like, this was the same problem even 10 years ago, and it still persists. It's changing slowly, but
the writing isn't changing. I'm gonna say that the way they're writing South Asian men is not changing. It's just every role that I've gotten that has been sexualized was non-South Asian first.
And then they switched it, right?
Because they were like, oh wait,
because you're sexy as fuck, son.
That's basically all I'm trying to make. It's so uncomfortable. Here's the thing. It's really uncomfortable because, like, I truly feel like it's a strange mantle to feel like you're carrying. But, like, I truly, like, I have been fortunate. I mean, the creator of Nurse Jackie, when they brought me back, because I did one episode on Nurse Jackie, and then they brought me back for the second season, then the third and the fourth. When I remember we were sitting there in the photo shoot, and I was just sitting with her, and I was 22 when I did that episode, and then 23 when I, like, started working, and I was really young, I was really green, I'd only done a couple things, and so I was sitting there, and I just went up to her, and I was like, listen, I want to thank you for this. And she was like, listen, no, you did a great job. And she was like, also, listen, man, we brought you back to bang our hot doctor. And I was like, what? Oh, cool. My first job was like, oh, you're going to seduce Uma Thurman. So I've just been really fortunate that, like, I have that aspect of our culture and that aspect of, like, masculinity has been, I've been able to, like, be a part of. And I'm not the only one. Manisha's done it. Sendhil has done it. I think I'm just one of the few that's gotten to do it. But
totally.
They were always non-Indian first, though. They were always
exactly.
Non-Indian
but that's I think that's where okay. Getting back to what Akash was saying about the entrepreneurship artist thing, and is I saw that trend, and I've been seeing it slowly change. But for me, I am also like, you know, I'm all right, but I'm not a dude that's also gonna compete and beat out like the nerdiest dudes. I mean, if you saw, I'm not like I'm stocky. And they're not looking for that body type, you know what I mean, for that role. So I just haven't been going out for that kind of stuff. But for me, it was like, oh, I need to learn how to tell a good story. I need to learn how to write and learn this back end. Because if that shift is going to change, it's going to come from the back of the ship, pushing, you know, the front of the ship to that place. It's not going to come from the people steering the boat necessarily.
So are you doing this for just South Asians in the future? Or
no, it is for me and my peers and my collaborators and the people I work with, because a lot of it is just controlling your content nowadays and knowing how to push it out, you know. But I do think, you know, there is this, you know, when you look at black artists, they have their Tyler Perrys, regardless of what you may think about him. That dude is killing it.
I agree.
And the Spike Lees, where if you're good enough and you're making waves, they will reach down and scoop you up and go, hey, come work with me. Come right. do shit with us because we're right. doing dope stuff. We think you have talent and we're going to co-sign you, basically.
Right.
And the Asian community in general just doesn't really have a ton of presence like that, let alone the South Asian community. You know, there isn't like a group or a production house or a group of artists that all kind of work and scoop up young people. And I'm not saying it needs to be exclusively that, but
well, let me ask you this, because I used to get really, and I want to hear both of your thoughts, because I think I used to get really upset with M. Night Shyamalan and with Mira Nair, mm-hmm. both. Because whether right or wrong, I used to feel, I was like, you guys are in a place of power. And M. Night Shyamalan, you're not doing anything. I mean, he did The Last Airbender. He put Dev in that. Yeah. But, I mean, you're not telling stories about it. And you're not even... And maybe he did and I didn't know about this, but I was like, are you even, like, helping out young South Asian filmmakers? Mira Nair, she told The Namesake and she did The Reluctant Fundamentalist, and I know she works with Riz, and I know she's a little bit better about it. But she also is like, you know, I mean, listen, and you know, I'm not going to fault her. I mean, she's married to a man from Uganda, so she's out in Uganda, has a film school out there and doing work out there. So do you feel like it should be their responsibility to have started to help out?
No, I don't impress that responsibility upon anyone. Because I don't...
Really?
Yeah, because okay. it's not...
That's probably fair.
It's not fair to them because they, getting back to the artist thing, they are artists. They're not activists, right?
I don't know. I honestly, I don't know that you can be one without the other.
Really?
I don't know that you can. I do, because I think of art as a service. And if you are not... If there's not some activism that's going on, then I don't really, then it's just masturbation.
Let me ask you this. Do you think to be great art, you need to have a moral imperative that the art is pushing?
No, because I don't necessarily know that activism is always coming. It's coming from, you need to be spreading, there has to be some intention behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And that intention is usually even if you're reflecting something that you see as like negative or that you struggle with, you have the understanding that the point that you're doing is you're trying to reflect this to the world so that they can start to deal with it. I think that's a service, right? So I think that's a form of activism.
So then where does M. Night Shyamalan helping out young brown directors or brown actors fit into that view?
I don't know that that fits into necessarily that his art isn't, you know what I mean? I might have lost myself, but we had two separate conversations going then.
Okay. Like, you don't, are you saying that,
I guess I just don't really see, if you're have an activism in your art, I guess that's, you're saying, how does that fall into his thing, right? Into,
yeah.
M. Night Shyamalan. I guess I'm wondering if I'm really calling M. Night Shyamalan an artist. I guess is the really the crux of what we're doing here.
Because I mean, if you're going to call out M. Night Shyamalan, it's got to be consistent. You can't excuse Mindy for not doing it.
I wouldn't say that I would, okay, necessarily. Right, you know, I mean, and I don't know the answer if we're going to really dive down this. I don't know if I would, like, take his artist title away. I mean, that's kind of crazy. But I do think that if you're, like... I do agree that it may not be fair to specifically put that activism clause on him.
Yeah.
But I don't agree that artists aren't activists.
Okay.
I think it might be... I agree with you that it's unfair to impress that upon other people because that's my choice. And that's how I feel my responsibility is, right, to impress that upon someone. It's out of my place. But I do draw distinction with the idea. I do draw a problem with the idea that artists aren't activists.
Well, I think...
Does that clarify?
Yeah, it does. I think what I'm taking away from that is artists... I think the question is not can they be activists, but should they be?
I think they are.
By nature?
Yes, I think if you're an artist, you're an activist.
I don't know, man. I don't really give a fuck.
But I don't know. Can I be super cool?
And the only activism maybe could be I don't give a fuck.
But I don't think, because here's the thing, is you're doing this. And I think this is a form of activism. Whether you agree with it or not, I think this is a form of activism.
Okay.
It's not a militant activism. It's not a protest activism. I think there's different kinds of activism.
To me, as a comedian, it's like saying Seinfeld's not an activist. Because his show is literally about nothing.
But I'm going to say this.
His comedy is literally about nothing.
But is... That's an interesting question. Are comics artists?
I just think it's very haughty to call a lot of us artists in entertainment. I think we are entertainers. I hate calling us artists just because I think it's arrogant. But at the end of the day, the way most people classify artists, comics are artists.
But I would say this, but the way that I'm classifying artists, I wouldn't necessarily classify...
Yeah, but it's because you just decided in the second that you're an activist if you're an artist.
That's not just in the second. I mean, I think this is something that I've how I define artists.
Well, then let's get more specific then.
Yeah.
If you got into a position that M. Night was in where you had the star power to just be like, nope, that dude's being in my movie and you can't do anything about it, and it happens to be like a 21-year-old... You know,
girl that you're trying to hook up with.
You sure? Yeah, or you know, just saying.
Where do we go with this?
I'm just saying. Would you take that on as a responsibility?
100%. I look forward to the time when I will.
Okay.
I think that I have a responsibility. Now, that may not form in like an inappropriate use of my power on a particular project. I wouldn't like take a project and say, well, this story about, you know, or like fuck with the story just to serve that mission. I think that, you know, we are in service to the story always.
So
as
I think the entire argument that we're having about just this whole M. Night help, like, is it completely filters back down to the way, and I made the black people comparison versus brown people comparison, why those two cultures are so different, even at those top tier levels, filters all the way back to how we are as communities.
Right.
Back here. Because... And we talked about this the other day. It has so much to do with black Americans, like, when they do enter this field that is, you know, the guy who directed Dope was talking about just kind of feeling like an outcast because he was like a nerdy black guy. And he just did a film that really represented his upbringing and how he felt like, you know, fish out of water and all this stuff. Yet... There still is, like, this community aspect to his artistry. He really wants to depict the black upbringing, which brings about young black actors and finding these guys and working and collaborating with them. And they stick together. They want to tell these stories together because that is... They want to kind of show the juxtaposition between black... you know, life and white life in this country, or black nerdism and white nerdism, and how, like, the different experiences flesh themselves out in that way, right?
On a different, similar concept, but different, you know, manifestation, there's a black in Hollywood, like, thing. They watch. I know there's a Black in Hollywood event every to watch Empire together at a.
And
they
don't
go together to do
definitely.
That.
And don't get me wrong. That. There's tons of black on black hate when it comes to just jealousy and careers. There's always going to be that. There's always going to be infighting. But I think with Indians, ultimately, in this country, we don't come together over a common struggle. Because we kind of don't have one that's big enough to bond us. You know, we don't have a long enough history to feel the oppression of, American,
We also entered on the backs of a civil rights struggle that has freed us from having to deal with that.
Right.
Same
but that, that we are like, as Indian Americans, we're so removed from that struggle, that, you know, kids in India grew up with in terms of their relationship to British colonialism. Like we don't experience that. And even when you guys did that live show, there was one Indian student, he still stands out to me. His experience and interpretation of what Indian kids go through versus how Indian American kids label themselves is so different. They think about their lives in such a different context versus, you know, you're trying to impress upon him and say like, hey, we're brown, you're brown. He's like, we don't see it that way because there's so many different types of people in the country that it's not
right.
You can't just lump us all into one umbrella. And I think that's the problem, is that there's a lot of wealth amongst Indians that there isn't this need to come together.
Well, let me ask you a question. Because we talked about that with Dr. Sony when we had him on the podcast, which and it's true, it's like a lot of times these orienting principles come around some sort of violent act against the community, and that's how they kind of rally. Is there an orienting principle that we can come together around that's not about us being attacked? Like, is there an alternative for an orienting principle?
Or should we just start paying white dudes, beat the shit out of a lot of black people? Low-key might be the best thing for
us. Some fucking, like, straight-up James Bond conspiracy shit.
Can I tell you, my boy he was like, listen, you want to solve AIDS in this country tomorrow? Somehow infect the president's, whoever the president is, somehow infect the president's daughter or son, child. With AIDS.
Patrice O'Neill has a bit about how if there's no celebrity with your disease, that shit ain't never getting cured.
Yeah.
There ain't gonna be no fundraiser.
It's true. Yeah.
But let's go back to the actual, is there an orientation? What are your thoughts?
That call to action is super, super, that's an ideal. That's like a utopian, like all of us should be able to come together. It's like the idea of, you know, us taking care of gun control before 20 kindergartners get shot up. Like, you can't, it's just really hard for human beings to come together unless they have a common enemy.
Without urgency and stakes.
Yeah, it's just difficult.
So you're saying it's a futile exercise?
No, it's not futile. I'm just saying it's very utopian. I don't know. And the other thing too is like, our kids' generation is going to be even more removed from that because they are going to be so much more assimilated that they won't need to use their Indianness to relate to people as much, because their interests and their personality will be less used against them in harmful ways, that they can actually just be a person irrespective of their skin color. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight, but I'm just saying they will have it easier.
I mean, I know what you're
saying.
That terrifies me as a concept.
And they just won't gravitate towards their Indianness as being a thing that relates them to other Indian kids. And that's kind of what that little nugget is kind of what you're talking about with M. Night and Mindy. I just think that I'm sure on some level she really, really appreciates being Indian and appreciates the culture. But when it comes to her artistry, she doesn't draw from that well. And I gotta
be honest, I can't speak that much about Mindy because I haven't seen her full show. So I can't speak that much about it.
Yeah, I mean,
I know she as a writer for The Office did bring like the volley day to it, and she played on a stereotype of like the Daisy like girl who was really white, but it was obviously she was playing at something. It was a satirical kind of point of view.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, I can't even really speak to her outside of that experience, which was actually.
I'm more so just speaking to, you know, that that whole, like, how come, you know, the M. Nights aren't reaching down and trying to help out young Indian directors? I mean, that's just like, you know.
But that's just, to me, is just an indicative of what you were talking about. It's like a community that's not saying, like, hey, we are a community. We need to talk about our experience.
Right.
We are not, like, we're not throwing events for, like, it was funny. I was nominated for a SAG Award with Nurse Jackie a few years ago, and it was the same time that Life of Pi was nominated. So Ambani tried to do like a South Asians or like an Indians in Hollywood, like, and it was so funny. We got there, and I got there, and there was like 12 people there.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's going on?
Dog, no one listens to this podcast.
What are you talking about?
We're doing this exact thing. We're trying to bring people together. Hey, here's a podcast for us to come together, and nobody give a fuck.
I don't think that that's true. And you know that's not true based on the accounts that we've gotten. I mean,
yeah,
I think
The 400 people who listen really love it.
Dude, that's something.
Yeah, that's something.
3
for sure.
Million. Y'all ain't shit.
I don't know what you're I mean.
There goes Akash just lashing out at his fans.
Well, it's just, it's ludicrous what he's saying, because the truth is we've also, we've been at this for 3 months. We haven't built yet. I just don't think that, like, that's really... We've heard really positive response about this desire to have this space. We have people on there that are actively trying to make this space. So I don't think that that's the point I was making about Ambani was that he was like, he tried to do that, mm-hmm. and he went about it in a way that he said, let's look for already established. He looked for all the people that have been nominated in the last 15 years. And I was like, that's your mistake. You're looking for people that have already achieved success. You got to start reaching from the ground. There are people that are trying to build, because that's how we're going to build that community.
Yeah.
You can't start looking for like the people that have already made it right now,
because
we're too young.
Yeah.
We're too young a community for that, which is also why we have fewer listeners right now, because we're still young, bitch.
Well, I also think that, okay, getting back to the question you asked about the production company and why, you know, with the guys I collaborate with, it's, you know, a lot of them are Indian or Pakistani or whatever. We're all brown trying to do this thing. I think it has partially to do with working with other people of Indian or brown descent, you know, in Hollywood. But it also has to do, I think, with telling different stories from different vantage points that are really fucking good. Like, I think about this example all the time. The Indian mafia in Mumbai is fucking nuts. They are out of their minds, violent, and have control of the city. And you're telling me that there isn't some badass Godfather story that could be told about that?
Well, it's been told. It's been told in Bollywood.
It has been, but that's the thing. Is like, you take white Hollywood, and they will do a Russian mob story. They will do a English mob
story.
That's
because Russians are close enough to white people that it can pass.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, you can take an American lens and apply that and not have it be a Bollywood production, but still have the story be really good.
Not if they're not white, dog. Because there's the things we haven't proved that we are we haven't proved that we are willing and are going to pay top dollar for that kind of content.
See, that's where I think you're wrong, because when you look at box office trends, it's all going international. 2/3 of all blockbuster movies and or any movie that has a reasonable amount of violence in it, once it gets released overseas, that's where they look to get the money.
But that market is very rarely India.
Yet.
No, it's also based on a lot of these movies are censored, and a lot of those movies can't get into India. A lot of these movies aren't. I mean, it's changing what the market in India wants.
Right.
But we don't really make movies that are that tenable in India.
Can I say one thing to Prashant's point, though? If Bollywood is so internationally successful, and there's a lot of dishum action Bollywood movies, people in other countries, by extension, theoretically, are willing to see that. They're willing to see Indians doing things like being in a mafia movie.
Right.
So then, if we're looking at that, it could be viable to make an Indian action movie that would do well internationally.
I mean, I think that you could. I think that you should. I think it'd be hard to sell the American studio executives.
100%. And that's kind of getting back full circle to the whole point of, like, I don't want to have to... I mean, look, when I say this, I don't mean it, like... I just don't want to have to beg. Obviously, I have to have relationships with people to, like, build this thing. But when it comes to cultivating the story, knowing what makes a good story, knowing actors, knowing directors, knowing people that can bring it to life. Like, that's where I'm like, oh man, like, this is, I just keep seeing a vacuum that is glaring. And I want to fill that vacuum with my friends and, you know, my collaborators who know that, look, we're smart business people. We know finance. I've got friends in film financing. I've got friends in all these departments. And it's like, there isn't like,
but we're just not coming. I'm hearing from you that call to action. Like, what I'm hearing from you is, and we got to wrap this up in a couple minutes, but what I'm hearing from you is, let's start making this. Let's start doing
definitely.
It.
But this, so my point is like, yes, I would love to work with that and, you know, I don't want to have delusions of grandeur, but I would love to be that dude with my other friends and you guys to just do that stuff. But when it comes to other artists that are brown, I never place that expectation on them.
That's fair. And I think that I honestly, I mean, I think that I'm wrong at times to do that. That might be coming from my own place of frustration that I haven't done it yet. And wanting someone else to do work that honestly, looking in the mirror, I need to be doing myself. That very well could be where that comes from.
Yeah.
But what I'm hearing, the beautiful thing is that, like, that we're hearing is that we have agency. We're not helpless at all.
And oh, 100%.
And we can do this. And I think that that's, I don't know. I don't know if we were trying to find a message of this podcast at all today, but that's the one that I'm taking away with it.
No, I think, I mean, that whole idea of agency is 100% the case. I just think that, and this is something, I don't know about you, Akash, if you felt this way, it's exactly analogous to how when we start a comedy, to be in comedy, you had two routes. You had improv and stand-up. Right. And those were the only two things you could... You didn't even think that, oh, maybe I could be a YouTube star because it wasn't a thing yet.
Right.
And I think the same thing happens with the film industry to a great degree. Indian people want to be in it, but the only thing they immediately see are being an actor or being a director. They don't think about, oh, I could get in there and actually help make good stories. I could have a different role but be a part of this thing. Because those kind of roles, those guys behind the scenes, they're only visible once you're neck deep in the industry and you realize, like, oh, the actors are like the last component that, like, not the last component, but they're the tip of the iceberg that people see,
right,
of the production. And that's it. And we're just so new to being in entertainment that not enough people are taking that leap to go, yeah, I'll go, you know, be an executive, or I'll try and be a showrunner, or I'll try and whatever.
That's a good point. It's time to start taking over.
Yeah. That's it. We're coming for you, white people.
Guys, we're going to drop our discussion episodes in a couple days. Prashant, thank you so much for... how can people find you?
What's the you best? Can. I go dark on the internet. No, I don't. I have a Twitter handle.
He tweets once a year. What is it?
Yeah.
Venkat.
ETC.
Yeah.
My name can't fit. That's the reason why I can't put it all on there.
So find him at Twitter, at VenkatETC. Are you on Instagram?
No.
No website?
No, I got a website. It's PrashantVenkat.com.
PrashantVenkat.com, VenKat.
Yeah.
We'd love to have you back. In the meantime, guys, please keep subscribing to the podcast, telling people about the podcast, write some shit somewhere on the website, on an iTunes review. Just do something with your fucking life.
We're going to have our discussion in a couple of days. Get at us about this very long, winding, maybe redundant podcast that we just did. I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple of days.
God bless.